Hey Amarillo, I'm Jason Boyette, and you're listening to Hey Amarillo, the interview podcast featuring some of the most interesting people and stories of Amarillo, Texas. This episode of Hey Amarillo is supported by Lazy Boy Home Furnishings. Now, you probably know Lazy Boy is a national brand, but its Amarillo store is independently owned and operated by the Hawkins family. They live here in town. And here's the thing, Lazy Boy offers a lot more than just the recliners you probably think of when you hear that name. Amarillo's locally owned Lazy Boy Home Furnishings has a ton of products available. They're all in stock, ready for you to take home or get delivered today. So go visit the showroom at 3636 Sonsi. That's Lazy Boy of Amarillo at 3636 Sonsi. And as part of this podcast partnership with Brick & Ale Magazine, I want to give a podcast shout-out to realtor Leslie Cunningham of Keller Williams and to orthopedic surgery specialist Dr. Anthony Mancuso II of Northwest Physicians Group. Read the free e-edition of Brick & Elm's March-April 2024 issue at brickandelm.com. It's a really good one. Today's guest is Scott Houdeshell. Scott is the CEO of Hey Buddy, Hey Pal, the Amarillo-based toy company behind the Eggmazing Egg Decorator. Now, I'm sure you've heard of that product. It's popular literally all over the world. Scott's the guy behind it. He's had a lot of careers. He's been an apartment handyman. He operated a recording studio. He was a farmer's insurance agent. But in 2017, he invented what became the Eggmazing Egg Decorator. He developed the prototype. He worked with his friend Curtis McGill in creating a business. And, well, hundreds of thousands of units later and one Shark Tank appearance later, those two guys are in the toy business. And so with Easter coming up, the company is selling an Eggmazing every 18 seconds on Amazon, which is just incredible. So Scott and I talk about his diverse career. We talk about the product's origin story and why Hey Buddy, Hey Pal is still based here in Amarillo. Scott Houdeshell, welcome to the Hey Amarillo podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Jason, and Hey Amarillo.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honored to have you. I want to start with you the same way that I start with all my guests, and that's just to ask why you're here. So what brought you to Amarillo in the first place?
Born and raised here in Amarillo, Texas. Parents are from surrounding region, Headley, Texas, Donley County. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they moved after Daddy got back from Vietnam. Okay. Moved to Amarillo, and yeah, I was born and raised here.
Did he come here for work reasons? Did he have a job here, or opportunity reasons, I guess?
Yes. Yeah, after he went to Vietnam, came here to go to work at Bell Helicopter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
where'd you go to school in Amarillo?
I went to Randall High.
All right.
Yeah. Graduated 1992.
All right. 92 is when I graduated.
Yeah.
I was at Tesco. So did you know what you wanted to do with your life at that point? Did you have a plan?
I spent my, majority of my life trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Okay. So. You're still trying to figure that out, or is it solid now?
I think I'm going to be the Easter Bunny.
Okay. So. Okay. Well, tell me what your career path looked like. Did you go to college after Randall?
I tried after high school, went straight in, you know, which I was working during high school anyway. It's in the work program. But after graduated, continued to work, tried a few college courses, but I don't like sitting. I got to keep moving. So always been good with my hands working. So my parents purchased an apartment complex, and that's kind of where I learned how to fix things.
Okay.
All through life. So I learned how to build cabinets and remodel apartments and paint, clean carpet. So,
what was that apartment complex?
I called the Mockingbird Apartments.
Okay, yeah. I know that one. How long did you do that kind of work?
We owned those for five or six years.
Okay,
and we decided to sell. And prior to that, we grew up, and I say we, my brother and I grew up in a music family. Daddy played guitar and drums, so we spent our teenage years rocking and rolling in the bedroom, listening to Buddy Holly and the Beatles and mm-hmm. Beach Boys. So back to the apartments, when we sold those, Daddy gave us the opportunity to build a recording studio here in Amarillo. And it just so happens we owned another lot on Mockingbird next to the apartments. So we decided to build a professional recording studio, Studio 66, here in Amarillo, Texas. So kind of went from remodeling and managing apartments into audio recording and doing commercials.
Okay, that's a pretty typical journey, I guess. tell me about the kind of work at the recording studio. So what did that look like back then?
It could be anything from, garage bands coming in, wrote their first song, wanting to get it recorded, to radio commercials, mm-hmm. to symphony work. It just depends, I never really turned anyone away. If they knocked on the door and said they were going to pay me, I let them in.
How long did that last?
We had the recording studio for almost 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
The recording industry changed a lot, I would imagine, during that period. We were talking off mic that when you started it, it was still mostly analog, and Absolutely. It started to switch to digital.
It was switching to digital. I had a lot of good, talented people come through there, but it was kind of like after you record a great song, what do you do with it?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really know anything about publishing. So a lot of guys and bands wound up going other places, the bigger cities, Austin, and they deserve to, so their music could be heard. So
there was still a need for that in Amarillo. I mean, I know a lot of local advertising at that point was taking place, recording in studios for radio stuff, although a lot of it took place in the radio stations too.
Always a need for it. I think we just wouldn't say got burned out. It's just hard to make a living in the recording business.
Okay. So
it was time to move on.
What time was that when you decided to move on?
We built it in 1998, as the young kids would say, the 19th century. And we sold it 10 years later.
So, okay.
Yeah. We did acquire another apartment complex after that, smaller units that I lived in and took care of, but it was time for me to go find a career.
Okay.
So decided insurance might be where the money was. So I went and got my adjuster's license, for the whole disaster scene.
Mm-hmm.
Did that, came back to Amarillo, and now you're just sitting around waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah.
And that was kind of difficult. And finally, I got the call. But in between that, I'd reached out to our local insurance company here in Amarillo, Farmers Insurance. I was seeing if I could get in through their adjusting program. And I didn't really realize it, but I'd called the district office, and agents and owners of insurance agencies really have nothing to do with
the
claim side mm-hmm. of it. And I got invited down to talk to the district manager, Jeff Ivey, and didn't know I was going to leave there with an offer to start my own insurance agency. But I did. I had to do a lot of soul searching. And that's how I wound up in the insurance business.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was fast forward 2012 or 13.
All right.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a lot of work kind of getting that off the ground. It's all about the relationships that you build, and you've got to go sell it.
It is all about the relationships. I have a pretty good circle that helped me get off the ground. Grandma Gerber was my first client. So, all friends, family. We're waving my flag for me, and I started with zero policies.
Yeah.
That was the program Farmers had at the time. We'll hand you the agency, but you've got to build it. So it was tough. Everyone, when the phone rings, they're not calling to say hi and good job. It's mostly something went wrong and
right.
want you to fix it, which I understand that. That's why you have insurance.
That is a difficult side of the insurance industry, though,
mm-hmm.
is that if you are talking to your customers, they're not always happy about it. Until they get an insurance check or something like that. But it usually the instigating phone call is not always good news.
Yeah. It, most of the time, 99% of the time, it's not. Either rates are going up, or that coverage that you offered them a year ago, they needed it. They need it now, and they didn't choose it back then. So I tried not to be too aggressive,
mm-hmm.
with clients, because I mean, I know how I like to be treated, you know, when you're buying something. So yeah, but it was a interesting journey, and all that led me to what I'm doing today.
Tell me, before we get to what you're doing today, do you feel like your personality was a good fit for insurance world? Like, did you feel that it's not for everybody to have to do sales or to have to comfort people?
The selling part of it, no. I don't consider myself a salesman. I took the approach of my circle's big enough that I just want everyone to know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And when it's time, I know my phone will ring. And that's the approach I took. I was never much of a salesman. I'm more of I can fix things. If you let me fix it, I can figure it out. So, and that's kind of, even when signing up a new policy, it would be, you know, I know you don't think this is going to happen, but it happened last week to another client.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, it's just a matter of time. So let's get the window breakage on your policy, or even with selling life insurance. Mm-hmm. That was part of the job too. So no one thinks they're going to be gone tomorrow, but it can happen.
How long did your insurance office last?
I was there for 8 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was eight to 9 years.
So let's talk about the instigating factor that kind of resulted in your career change. Tell me the origin story.
Well, next to my insurance office, I was able to acquire a small shop next to it, had adjacent doors, and I've always been creative, working with my hands, like I mentioned earlier, and really into woodworking at the time. Hmm. So, you know, for stress relief, I would go out in the shop and build something. There's custom coffee tables, built a boat, started raining in Amarillo once and decided I better build a boat, go-kart airplane, just fun stuff. Mm-hmm. I kind of needed that in the insurance business.
Sitting at a desk all day versus getting out and doing something.
And keeps my hands busy. So from there, fast forward 2015, I am with friends and family, Easter, decorating with all the kiddos, which all refer to me as Uncle Scott, mm-hmm. and at the kitchen table making a mess with all the dyes and smelly vinegar. And that's when it came to me. There's got to be a better way. They had already given up watching the egg change color in the cup and went back to their phones and Legos. And I thought to myself, if I can spin this egg, I think I can get these kiddos back to the table. So we were at my best friend and business partner's sister-in-law's house. And she's crafty. And I knew she had all these materials in her house. So I asked her to round up a hot glue stick, a fireplace lighter, mm-hmm. and a electric cordless drill. So if you can imagine taking the hot glue stick and tightening it up in the collet of the cordless drill.
Right.
And I heated up the other end of the hot glue stick and I stuck a hard-boiled egg to it and let it dry.
Okay.
And then had my buddy Curtis McGill, I had his oldest daughter, Cassidy, go grab some markers out of the boys' room and come back. I pulled the trigger on the cordless drill. It started spinning the egg. She touched a marker to it, and that's the first amazing egg decorator.
Okay. So that was a very analog way to figure out that problem.
Very analog. But all the kiddos said, I'm next, Uncle Scott. I want to do it next. So we decorate that egg. I pop it off, reheat the hot glue stick, mm-hmm. stick a new egg on it.
I think anybody who has used the Eggmazing egg decorator sees the fun in how it works, mm-hmm. and what you can do just with markers and that egg spinning, you Absolutely. Know, and the little thing. But it came a long way from a hot glue stick and a drill to what that product was. And I Absolutely. Think that gap is the gap that most people who have cool ideas can never get past, right?
Absolutely. That is and at the time I didn't even realize what I had created. I just know when I left Easter that day that something was there. Mm-hmm. And the next day I went into my wood shop and started building wooden prototypes of how to spin an egg, because I know a 3-year-old can't do it that way.
Right.
And I still have a lot of prototypes to this day, and it's fun to look back on. One version was I had the egg spinning in a medicine cup. The medicine cup was glued to a gear that a rubber band went around and connected to a motor.
Okay.
And you turn it on and you could decorate half of the egg, because the other half was in the medicine cup. After you decorated half of it, you would take it out and turn it over and decorate the other. And I'm like, okay, that's a little better. And it kept advancing. Curtis still jokes to this day that I would bring over all the prototypes and let his kiddos test it out.
Right.
And he's like, my house smelled like hard-boiled eggs for a year. But I think now he'd tell you it's paid off. So
tell me how you got to the point where you figured out, okay, this is what works.
Mm-hmm.
You have maybe a homemade prototype, but you still got to like move on to something that can be mass produced. So how do you do that?
When I figured out how that the egg needed to be spinning on wheels, that's how it works. There's 4 wheels inside the egg mazing, and no matter what size the egg is, it's going to touch on those wheels mm-hmm. in 4 points. So it can be a smaller egg, a large egg, and Newton's law, centrifugal force, it's holding it in place while it spins. There's a lot of science behind it that I really didn't know I was a part of. But once I knew how it needed to spin, now I needed it to look like a sellable,
right,
product on the shelf. And not a very technical guy when it comes to computers. I can shape wood and metal a lot of ways, but when it comes to a computer.
Yeah.
But I convinced myself to purchase a 3D printer.
Okay. And that was pretty early in 3D printing.
Very early. But before I did that, I filled out an application to a credit card. Because I didn't have the finances, and they approved me, and I maxed out that card the first purchase with that 3D printer.
Okay.
Got it here, and now I had to figure out what really this machine does and how to work a program. And there's actually a free program I found online that allowed me to draw all the parts and pieces. And I slowly learned how to build the first egg mazing.
Okay.
It took.
So you didn't take it to an engineer or
no.
somebody like that. You figured out all those pieces
out
on your own.
Every bit of it. It took about, once I had all the parts drawn, it took about 15 hours to make one egg mazing.
Okay.
And it was, I started Easter 2015 coming up with the idea. By Christmas, I was 3D printing, because I remember carrying the 3D printer around in my truck, and anywhere I was going, whether it was Christmas Day at my parents, I would plug it in and keep printing.
Okay.
So I carried it around like a baby, my baby. And that's how the first prototype was made.
I mean, that's a lot of work still just to finish that one thing and figure that out. I think a lot of people might not have the drive or the discipline or the ambition to like carry that through. Why were you able to get to the end point of that?
I think that's just kind of how my brain is wired. I won't stop till something's figured out.
Okay. Was it more stubbornness than you believed in its potential, or was it both of those things?
That, and I saw the reactions, starting to see the reactions of, family and friends when I would, show them new prototypes and how much fun it was. Mm-hmm. And also it was almost time for my exit as an insurance agent.
Okay.
I promised myself that, when I mentally was checked out, that it wasn't fair to my clients, and it was time to move on. So I literally was putting all my eggs in this basket.
Okay.
It had to work, Jason. So I don't know what I would be doing now if it didn't work.
So tell me about the process once you finished the design.
Mm-hmm.
you've got to form a company. You've got to figure out how to mass produce it.
Yes.
You've got to figure out how to distribute it to people. Like, what were some of those steps?
That is where my best friend and business partner to this day, Curtis McGill, comes in the picture. He had told me the whole time, him and his wife, Stacy, once you figure this out and we know you're going to, we'll back you on it.
Okay.
And Curtis has a degree in finance and already had other businesses here in Amarillo. And sure enough, I figured it out. And like you said, now it's time. Now we have to make them. And I started reading on the internet, how does someone with an idea get this done? I can't fly overseas.
Mm-hmm. Can't go to China and visit the plastics manufacturers
not
there.
Not at all. And I did go down the avenue of U.S. manufacturing, but at the time I couldn't even get a phone call returned. Found out most U.S. manufacturing is doing medical devices.
Okay.
And to stop their machines to build a prototype.
For some startup.
Yeah. It's not happening. And it would be too cost ineffective to do that. But I found a sourcing company, which is just a middleman mm-hmm. that knows the process, and went through them. And at that time, we didn't know how much it would cost to make one egg mazing or 10,000 for that matter.
Right.
But got to that point, got our quote. And when it was time to, for them to say, how many do we want? Curtis at the time, or still is, in commodities. So he knows that filling up a container is the best way to do something when you're shipping it. So we did the math and figured out 10,000 units, egg mazings could fit on a container.
So that was your first order?
That's how many we had ordered. And when we tell this story today in the toy industry, they look at us like we are crazy that we never product tested this in front of a group of kids. We just had them made. We're like, we used our nieces and nephews and mm-hmm. they loved it. So
you trust that they are representative enough of
the
kids?
We just did it.
Where did you finally get it manufactured?
Batch? The first run, it was made in China.
Okay.
We later we moved to Vietnam manufacturing, and now we're still overseas, but it is Australian owned company.
Okay.
That we have a great relationship with Zing, Z-I-N-G. Right. They make fun toys as well. So
is that a hard process? I imagine they would produce one and send it to you, and you have to prove it, make sure it works? Or was it like, is there a lot of trust involved that?
Manufacturing companies are real good at copying.
Okay.
So I had sent them a couple of the prototypes that I had built, and to a T. I mean, they copied it and sent it to me, and I approved them. And, even packaging, I'd never mm-hmm. done that before, but I leaned on locally that did photography and new Photoshop. So he helped me put together the first packaging of egg mazing. And we used all our own kids that,
mm-hmm. in the photos.
Yeah. And still to this day. So
how did you sell that first batch of 10,000? I feel like I encountered one probably within that first batch.
Yes.
It was before Shark Tank and all that kind of stuff.
Well, fingers crossed that they all get made and make it on the boat ride over.
Yeah.
We received it 43 days, the container, 43 days before Easter 2017.
All right.
Showed up to my insurance office on the side where my wood shop is, and I'll never forget it, and I still have it. The gentleman driving the truck gets out and cuts the lock off of it and says, let me know when you boys are done unloading these. Swings the doors open, and there was a whole lot of egg mazing egg decorators, and I look at Curtis, and we're like, what did we just do? What did we get ourselves into? We start calling friends. They show up. We unload all of them.
It wouldn't have fit in your shop, right?
Barely. And then it took over my insurance office.
Okay.
I had to lock the front door, start meeting clients elsewhere. Can I buy you a coffee today? And that kind of thing. Now we're approaching 40 days to Easter. Each day keeps ticking. And we went to our the local toy store here in Amarillo, Unique Toys, and talked to them, and they said, this is awesome. We'll take a couple cases, but you guys need to join Astra, which is an organization for toy companies. And They're going to give you access to all the members' emails, which are other toy stores. So we joined, got the list, 801 people on it. I started individually emailing and,
okay.
and started slowly selling a case, you know, here and there.
Just asking them if they would carry this in their store.
Yeah, would you be interested in it? And getting closer and closer to Easter, we had even convinced Make-A-Wish, the car show, to let us put up a booth there. And we were able to donate back to Make-A-Wish even back then. We were just the peddler show. It was just anywhere we could sell these before Easter. Well, in between all that time, we had sold a case or two to a toy store up in New Jersey. And her toy store name was Two Kids and a Dog. And she did an 8-second video of her daughter touching the marker to the spinning egg. And this is where you be careful for what you hope and pray for.
Right. Like a YouTube video?
Yeah, it was a Facebook.
Okay.
And her 8-second video was picked up by another mom blogger that had millions of followers. And overnight, we basically sold out, crashed our website. It was crazy. Every time we would sell one on our website, I would get an email notification. Mm-hmm. And I was in Lowe's with my dad at the time. We were fixing something at the house. But I just remember the emails kept coming in. It kept coming in. And it looked like the national debt clock was just, it happened overnight. And Curtis and I woke up basically in the toy business.
Is that fulfilling or is it a little bit terrifying? Like, do you get to a point where you're like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to ship all these thousands of products?
That was our one of many major obstacles. We have a big circle, family and friends, and it's easier to ship a case out because there's 12, mm-hmm. right? We just got 12 of them out the door. But when
one
you
at
start
a time.
Selling them on your website, it's one at a time. So they have to be taken out of the case pack, put in a smaller box. And that's what we did. We would set up a different place every night in someone's garage. And, you know, we bought the beverages and the pizza and fed everybody. But we did that for weeks straight. And
trips every day to the post office?
Yes, to the point. It was, trailers full. And we were bringing them in through the front door till finally they noticed what was going on. And we told them the story. And they handed us a key to the back gate and said, you guys start coming, y'all come through the back gate and we'll help you unload these every day. So that's how we got the first ones out. That's how it happened. Mm-hmm. And I still pinch myself to this day because I know it was fortunate. Not everybody's stories like that.
Yeah. Did you know at that point, this is going to be what I'm doing for the next few years, or did it still take some time to
still
figure
hoping?
That out?
Yeah, still hoping that this wasn't just a one and done.
Mm-hmm. Easter happens every year, so
it does.
Presumably,
we're still hoping it does, but you just don't know if it was okay because we ran out. I mean, there was a major demand for it, and we knew it, but we ran out so early. Was it like next year? No one's going to remember it because they couldn't get their hands on it this time. The demand was people that did buy them, wound up putting some of them, put them on, eBay and were selling them for 6 to 10 times the original price. So we got a few hate emails for that, but we're like, well, that's not us. I promise we're not doing that. So it still wasn't, is this what I'm going to do for a living now? Didn't know that yet. We signed with a rep company. Curtis and I knew in the very beginning we can't be everywhere selling these. We can't, we can't be in California selling. We can't be all over the country. We have to
for sure. You can't ship them every
exactly. We have to find a group that will represent this product. Yeah. So the group is out of Dallas, Diverse Marketing, and we've been with them since the beginning. We have picked up other rep companies since. To widen our region, but that was our first major move. So they started representing the Eggmazing, and then we went to our very first major toy show. And at that point, some of these booths cost $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, and we're still a starving company.
Mm-hmm.
Almost barely broke even from that first 10,000 Easter that we sold. There was a lot, a lot of money in spending going into getting us to that. So I'm just like, if we can just make enough to pay for this, you know, pay for this trip and the hotel and food and this booth, it's going to happen. I just know it's going to happen. And little did I know, we were the largest sales at that toy show.
Wow.
So that's where I'm like, oh, my, yeah, it's overwhelming.
Was that like toy stores or toy companies, toy manufacturers, like all those? That's what you were in front of there?
It was our first Astra show, that the organization that we joined. It's where you go set up a booth, mm-hmm. and toy stores from all around the United States come there, and they purchase your product and take it back, you know, or you ship it to their store. And we had a line, a constant line, 3 days in a row, just 30, 40 feet deep.
Wow.
And I remember just kept calling my mom back home and telling her, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this. It's working. It's happening. Because there's there was a few times my family thought I might have been a little bit nuts or going nuts around this journey, just how obsessed I was making, you know, trying to figure out how to spin this egg. And maybe I was a little crazy. But.
Well, I think it took that craziness to get to a finished product. A lot of people might have given up, you know.
And that is the one advice I give people when they do ask me, you've got to get it past the idea sitting on your couch. Mm-hmm. You've got to keep going. If you honestly believe in it, then you got to keep going.
The next step in, I guess, the success of that product, was it Shark Tank? I mean, did that kind of take it to another level?
It did. We had already found out several avenues, the major retail stores. We were able to already start talking, you know, to them. But the Shark Tank opportunity came. I saw it online, and they were having open auditions. And one happened to be coming through Dallas. And talked to Curtis and said, hey, I don't think we need to say no to anything. Let's just go explore this avenue. And if it makes sense, then let's go for it. And if it not, we'll turn around and come home. And at the time, I had also found an awesome polyester suit online with, they were called Oppo suits. And I wound up ordering those. And if you want to know if you have a best friend or not, if he'll put that suit on for you for Shark Tank, you know he's a best friend. But yeah, mine had light blue pale pants and a pink jacket, and his was the opposite.
Okay.
So we walk into, we're standing in line at 4 a.m. in Dallas, Texas, holding our, you know, the prototypes. Because when we auditioned at this time, Eggmazings had not even gotten here from the first 10,000.
Okay. So this was before that.
They're still
first
on the
success.
Water, and I'm still walking around with the
Got
original
it.
Prototypes. And we were one of the first ones in line, and you're in front of the casting directors. You don't get to see the sharks that
sure.
soon. And I was struggling with Curtis and I came up with, you know, our own mantra. But even the whole time driving to Dallas, I kept messing up my lines because I was nervous, and I still do that to this day. But we got through that audition, and we thought we had to get back to Amarillo. We walked out the door, and Curtis said, "Why are we leaving?" And I said, "I don't know. I thought we had to get back." And he goes, "No, let's go back in there." And we walked around with the Eggmazings and started. And because we had a lot of eggs in our pockets, in our jackets, and we let people start decorating. And that's when it started drawing the attention of the casting director.
Okay. So they got to see the product being used, not just being pitched.
Exactly. Hmm. And she came over to us and said, "What is that?" Because the actual audition, you're going behind a curtain, and it's just someone that works for the casting director.
Yeah.
But she saw it. She walked over and she allowed us to demonstrate it to her. And then she said, "Send that to the my casting director company Instagram, and I'll post it." And that's when I'm like, "Oh my goodness! Hmm. I'm glad we decided to turn around and go back in."
Yeah.
And then it's a waiting game from there. If you don't hear from them in two or three weeks, thanks, and try again next year.
Right.
But we got the email which I didn't know how many steps there were involved getting on Shark Tank. There's about 9 different steps. They keep emailing you back or calling you and just wanting to know if you're legit. So they just keep asking for new numbers, production numbers, sales, and just send us, you know, videos, just your day-to-day stuff. So we kept doing that. There was one video that I had bought a Easter bunny suit online, and one of the videos I sent in was me wearing the Easter bunny suit. And I'll never forget when we finally got the yes that we're going on Shark Tank. One of the producers said, Scott, you know that Easter bunny suit makes for good television, don't you? And I put the phone on mute, and I'm like, no. But yeah, so that's how we made it. And it was that was almost a year long journey.
I was gonna say, was it a year?
Yeah, it was close. At least 9 to 10 months.
All right.
Past a year, but we filmed it in 2000. And what year was that? 17, late fall 2017. And it didn't air till right before Easter in February 2018.
Okay.
Back to your original question. Shark Tank helped. It helps anyone for exposure, as we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
We were at a toy show in New York when it aired. So that was fun. We got to rent out a restaurant and enjoy that with friends and family. But yeah, it boosted sales immediately. We continue to this day. We get the rerun every year that it runs, and we see an instant
boost.
Yeah, an instant boost on sales.
So Eggmazing, I would assume, is still your most profitable product.
You've
created a bunch of other things, some toys, some games,
yes.
A variety of things. And so, like, you're a legit toy company with multiple products at this point.
We like to think so. One of the first things I was told at a toy show is, I was asked what's next. And I'm like, what do you mean what's next? This one almost drove me crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Have to do this again.
Exactly. And they're like, no, you have to stay relevant. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to want something new from you every year. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm in the toy business. So that's where the brain has to keep working. And like you said, we have several other products now. The Tremendous Ornament Decorator, same concept as spinning the egg, except this is a plastic ornament that you can decorate for Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah. We have many different variations of the egg spinner and a couple different variations of the ornament decorator. We also have a carving and stacking pumpkin kit.
Okay. So
allows you to carve a pumpkin and stack it like a snowman. And it comes with tea lights, and each tea light shines down into the pumpkin below. And it's just a fun do-it-yourself for the family. A new family fun and challenging, it's called Cake and Bake Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a speed round of stacking pieces of a cake, triangle cake in different colors. You turn over your card, and you have to build your cake in that order and put the correct topping on it to win the birthday candle and wear the chef's hat at the end of that game. So that's a fun game.
Is there pressure now to keep coming up with something new? Like, do you feel that pressure to create?
We have one thing that started happening. Well, first of all, our manufacturing company and everyone involved with that, they have a very creative mind.
Okay.
So even they help us come up with new and innovative products as well. We get phone calls and emails of other, you know, entrepreneurs or
pitching their idea to
inventors.
You.
In fact, that's a few of those we actually did.
Okay.
And they get the commission on sales, the mailbox money, if you will.
Right.
Because there's a lot of great ideas out there.
It's just like getting over that hump that you had to get over exactly. The production side.
It's kind of back to the recording studio. Like I said, I have this great song here, but I don't know what to do with it. Well, we found the path and the formula of how to launch a product.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of help others do it. We want it to make sense to our brand.
Right.
But still, there's a lot of creative people out there.
So you mentioned Make-A-Wish and giving back, and you've reached a point with your company where you've got success and you're using that success to to do good things. And so tell me about what's happening now with the Make-A-Wish.
Yes, we do like to give back to the community, especially kiddos. Curtis's nephew, Ethan, was diagnosed with leukemia. He's all good now.
Okay.
But Make-A-Wish was able to grant his wish. So he got to go be a Jedi.
Hmm.
And it's always been something we wanted to do. Even Shark Tank, part of Lori's deal was that she would give us half of her investment back to us to a children's charity of our choice.
Okay.
So we were able to give $175,000 to St. Jude and to Make-A-Wish, and that's just something we strongly believe in. But now we're trying to raise a lot of money or more money for our local Make-A-Wish Northwest Texas. And so we come up with win the Easter Bunny's money, and we are donating $10,000. And all it takes to get into the sweepstakes is go on mytruewish.org and donate as little as $10.
Okay.
And that gets you in the sweepstakes. Anyone's eligible to win, and the more you donate, the more chances it gives you. So for every $10 donation, it's going to give you a chance to win the Easter Bunny's money. It all goes to our local Make-A-Wish. They're a great organization, and yeah, we're hoping to have a great day. We've partnered also with the PGA Omni in Frisco, Texas. So the day before Easter, we're having a Easter egg hunt there. We're coming down, and we're going to set up a bunch of egg decorators and just let the kids have fun and decorate. And we're hoping to raise a lot of money.
All right. And that campaign lasts throughout the month of March until Easter?
March 25th is the end of it. It is a six weeks sweepstakes, and it ends March 25th. So please, go to mytruewish.org and donate if you can.
So the last thing I wanted to ask is, you know, now you have a toy and game producing company. It's called Hey Buddy, Hey Pal.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still based in Amarillo? Like, is this still an Amarillo business, even though you're doing manufacturing all
over?
We are
Amarillo, through and through. Offices are here, and everyone that works for the company lives here.
Mm-hmm.
We grew so fast that we have to warehouse in other places. But no, we are based here and always will be.
Is there something about the culture of Amarillo that you can see in what you've built, you know, maybe in the way that it formed you or the way that it formed Curtis or your families, your friendship? Like, is there some sort of part of the local character that is part of your success?
I believe so. Yeah. I grew up in a family that had small businesses, with the apartment complex. Even before that, my dad and mom owned a restaurant. Curtis's mom owns a bakery in Spearman. When we grew up in the small business mentality,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's welcomed here in Amarillo. I still consider what this is, as in the Eggmazing Egg Decorator, for what it is, we still kind of run it, in a small sense here in Amarillo, in just a little office off of Meadow Green.
Okay.
In the beginning life of the Eggmazing, when we have trying to figure out how we're going to sell 10,000 Eggmazings, the Amarillo community was real supportive. Local businesses were selling it. It was something that really not necessarily surprised us, but it made us feel real good that they believed in it like we did.
And not just toy shops either.
No, it was boutiques. There was a dog grooming business that was selling it. And my aunt was selling it out of her trunk.
Okay.
So, but the local Amarillo community, business-wise, and people were just outstanding, supporting us. And they still are.
This episode of Hey Amarillo is supported by Pinnacle by Rock Rose, a new community south of Randall High School in the Canyon School District and inside Amarillo city limits. This is a new master planned neighborhood in the fastest growing part of the city with 750 planned home sites. And what sets it apart is that this is the only neighborhood in the city where you can go to an elementary school, then an intermediate and junior high schools, and then high school without even having to leave the neighborhood. So imagine raising a family here and always being within walking distance of your child's school, with all the schools connected by open spaces and a pedestrian-friendly walkway. Pinnacle has multiple lots available if you want to build, plus homes on the market now from Amarillo's top builders. To learn more, visit pinnaclebyrockrose.com. That's pinnaclebyrockrose.com. Okay, I'm back with Scott Houdeshell. Scott, this is the part of the show I call 8 Straight. 8 Straight is sponsored every week by Panhandle Plains Historical Museum and Canyon on the WT campus. It's the largest history museum in Texas, and its current exhibitions include A Noble Partner, which is open through April, about the impact of horses on the High Plains and how horses and humans have worked together to shape life in the region. You can learn more about that exhibit or go see it at panhandleplains.org. Okay, first question is, when you think of Amarillo 10 years from now, what do you hope for?
First of all, I hope I'm still here.
Okay.
I hope our community keeps being strong and together. And you can see that here recently with all the devastating fires.
Right.
And we have a real strong, tight-knit community that when it's time to help and pull up the bootstraps, it happens. And I hope in the future it continues to be like that.
Yeah.
Less fires, but, you know, just.
I think we've seen the news cycle starts with devastation and then it turns into how many organizations are like mobilizing to help. And that's always an encouraging side of a disaster story.
Yeah,
that you
absolutely
see so many people springing into action.
Yeah. So prayers to all the families involved and all the first responders. But it takes a strong, faithful community to pull that off.
Okay. Other than wind, what does this area have too much of?
Potholes.
Yeah.
Maybe orange cones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Yeah.
We have a climate that leads to a lot of potholes. You know, water that freezes, turns to ice, gets warm, gets cold really fast.
Yeah, in 24 hours.
Yeah. What does this area not have enough of?
Trees and rain.
Yeah?
Yes. That would cut down on, well, like we spoke of, besides wind.
Yeah.
That would cut down on some wind, and we always need the moisture.
Okay. Other than Make-A-Wish, what's one local nonprofit you personally appreciate?
I'm an animal advocate, animal lover. All my friends and family are, too, so the local animal shelter.
Okay.
Go Adopt. One of my nephews was diagnosed with diabetes when he was younger. So the local diabetes High Plain chapter means a lot too. So
okay.
They do good work helping the kiddos with activities and education on diabetes.
All right. What's your favorite local coffee shop?
I'm going to split that so I don't get in trouble.
Okay.
I drink Palace Coffee and Roasters Coffee.
Okay.
So yeah. Two great coffee shops.
Great local businesses,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yeah.
What's your favorite local restaurant or food truck?
You know what? There's nothing beats a cherry lime and a cheeseburger from Hud's.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I am always surprised at the number of cars coming out of the drive-through any time of day at Hud's, and I assume they're just getting cherry limes. They may not be, but...
I think they got the market corner.
I think they do. What's your favorite neighborhood in Amarillo?
It's actually where I get to go to every day, what we call the Egg Quarters.
Okay.
And it's over in the southwest area of Amarillo, the Randall High area, which is where I went to school, where I grew up. After school, I would grab my fishing pole and go fish over in Horseshoe Pond.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just so happens that was where I... got to build the office and Egg Quarters, and I get to stare at that all day long and watch the geese, and it's pretty neat in a full circle.
Okay, that's fun to hear. It's I imagine it's not a super flashy place for an international toy company. There's not a giant spinning egg on top of it or anything like that. Or is that, future
I've got
plans?
I got a few toys over there, but little scooters, and we like to have fun too.
Okay. Last question. When was the last time you visited Cadillac Ranch?
I went last September, actually.
Okay.
In fact, for a while, I still had the paint cans rolling around in my truck. I had some people visiting from Portland, and they had never seen it. So we went and did the touristy thing and put our creative mark on a few of the caddies.
So. Okay, that concludes the 8 straight questions. I like to close by asking my guest to endorse something. So what's one thing you would like local people to know about or to experience?
Again, if I can go back to Make-A-Wish and what they do granting these kiddos' wishes, it is proven that the kids that have gotten their wishes granted have had a better success rate and less trips to the emergency room. It just changes demeanor. Most wishes average around $10,000 to have a child's wish granted. And right now they locally do not have enough to grant all the kids on the
okay,
list.
Okay, there's a waiting list.
Yeah,
then.
And that's why we are trying to donate, raise money and donate with the mytruewish.org.
Okay. So. All right, Scott Houdeshell, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
And that concludes the episode. Thanks again to Scott for the interview. You can find the Eggmazing Egg Decorator and other products at heybuddyheypal.com and, of course, in local stores. Thanks also to Pinnacle by Rock Rose, Lazy Boy Home Furnishings of Amarillo, and Panhandle Plains Historical Museum for supporting this podcast. Thanks also to Angelina Marie for editing the show. Thank you for listening. Hey Amarillo exists on a weekly basis because of listeners like you and the local people who support it financially, which you can do if you want to. I always appreciate it through patreon.com/heyamarillo. Hey Amarillo's executive producers include Patrick Burns, Jason Burr, Katie Linger, Corey Burns, Josh Wood, Wes Reeves, Cindy Graham, and Barbara and Jim Witten. This has been episode 344. My name is Jason Boyette, and I'll see you next week.